Hey, everyone who's listening right now, welcome to Radio Statler. This is Side Pocket, the only living person right now in the Statler booth. So if you just give us a few moments, because we actually have we're starting off today, our final day, the final countdown on Sunday at Radio Statler with a very interesting guest on a very interesting topic of subgroup of community, although to me that's sort of an understatement here, but we just want to get some mics checked so we can hear him properly. Could you speak and just see if it picks up?
Yep, check.
And then closer.
Check, 1, 2, 3, check. Still checking.
There we go.
Now I can hear myself.
Yep, and we're going to bring that up. Maybe bring me down a little bit.
Check.
Okay, so I think that's that should be a good mix. Let me know. I think we have just one. The last thing I just want to bring up is if anyone is even alive in IRC right now. If you guys didn't die from the amazing different board games and shenanigans going on, I'm sure Bunny's going to read later and then later on and then regret, because we do that every year. Here we go. This is IRC there. So now we're all set up here. So once again, for anyone who is alive at this moment, and actually there are still a ton of people in IRC right now, thank you for putting up, I should say, with Radio Statler until Sunday. It's if you've never seen a Hope before, this is Hope 11, and Friday and Saturday are always the hardest part of doing any con. So usually around when Saturday ends, I wish we could put cameras everywhere, because you only just see one sub-segment of the insanity that we'll probably talk about later at closing ceremonies. For this particular radio station, never mind the conference itself, which you can see streaming at hope.net, and you can then go and click watch, and we have the different rooms there. And if you want also hear unique content, you can go to radio.hope.net and listen to us live here, so please spread that around. So things get a little chaotic, so people are slowly coming in, but bright and early. It's kind of the rooster that crows in. I mean that in the best way. We are now starting off a topic, an interview that I've been, I had four things I was gunning for radio, and so far three of them came true. One was my booze night, which I think we way overachieved last night. I wanted to do a segment about the biohacking stuff that's going on here, and we also wanted to... I remember the other subgroup. Get the Pirate Party on here and get more of a political aspect of not only just general politics, but knowing your rights and how technology intersects in. Well, the last one was literally the first thing that I sent out, was trying to contact people. Were originally, Giant X was supposed to be in the room with me for this, because I don't know, did we hear stories, like legends? I can't even believe that you're here right now as a living, breathing human being, considering all the stuff that we hear around that. And what we're talking about is Free BSD and that amazing community. So would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
Sure. I'm George Noble Neal. I am heavily involved in Free BSD. I'm on Free BSD's core team, as well as a director of the 501c3 that supports the project, the Free BSD Foundation. This year, the foundation had a table at Hope, so we decided to see if we could arrange a conversation.
Is that the first time you're doing that for this Hope?
This is the first time we came to Hope, but we knew it was a good place to reach, you know, new people who don't really possibly know about us or know about FreeBSD, or sometimes they do.
So you guys share kind of the same thing with, like, the because also here, who I've been interacting with a lot is the Wikipedia group here in New York City. A lot of people don't realize that there's a whole organization for that, and it's on some. They've always seen good stuff from me, and they were like, you know, we should just show up. He keeps talking about this magical conference that happens in there, and if there's other people like him, we'll show up. And so it seems that you have two first here, so that and you guys.
Yep.
So for all the people who are drinking coffee, wondering where all the loud sounds are coming from, could you kind of describe the whole... Now, I know how impossible it sounds because there's a long history, but like just summary of what is FreeBSD and kind of the five sentences of leading it up to there.
Oh, five sentences. Okay. Well, anyway, FreeBSD is a Unix-like operating system. It's a derivative of the original work done at the University of California at Berkeley by the CSRG, the Computer Systems Research Group, back in the 70s and 80s to build the Berkeley release. And so there's a bunch of offshoots of that work. People have heard of FreeBSD, NetBSD, OpenBSD. Mm-hmm. So FreeBSD is one of those. We've been around for over 20 years. It's 300 kernel developers plus, you know, thousands of other developers working on package systems and everything else in the system. It's a PhD licensed, completely open source operating system. We like to say it's complete because you don't wind up having to install packages just to get normal things.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, well, that drives me kind of crazy. So we're just about to put out our 11th release. So it was pretty amusing to see the hope slogan of this one goes to 11 because we've been making the same joke for 11.0.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a coincidence amazing. Right
yeah.
there.
So we're about to put out our 11th release. That's currently in beta 2. The currently active release is FreeBSD 10.
So what's for this being the 11th milestone, not only for this con, but for the version of FreeBSD, what did you guys add in or stabilize in it that deserved that number jump up?
So the way we do releases is time-based. Mm. So, you know, we get to the point of every couple of years, we're ready to cut a release. We don't do it based on any particular feature. We will hold a release if something's not quite ready. Mm. I'd say the big things in this release are stability for ZFS, so upgrades to all of the ZFS code, which is the file system we use for sort of mm-hmm. large installations. There are two major file systems in FreeBSD. There's the fast file system, which Kirk McGuzik's been working on for many years, mm-hmm. and continues to be our, you know, go-to file system for like single disk or double disk mm-hmm. systems. And then there's ZFS, which we ported over from Lumos, or actually Open Solaris years ago. And we've been doing that.
Oh, so that's where that went. I was wondering. Yeah.
Well, Lumos still does it, right?
Yeah.
But we've had that for quite a while, and a number of people who work on ZFS actually work on FreeBSD at this point. Mm-hmm. So lots of stability in
is there sort of like a rivalry between the two file-based setups, or is it just more of like a friendly kind of like Open Def Con sort of thing?
No, we actually, one of the things that's nice about, I think, FreeBSD is we tend not to have sort of fiefdoms.
So you're not Linux?
Well, yes.
Thank God. Okay.
Yeah.
Continue. I love this already.
So we don't really have that. I mean, Kirk has been doing the work on the fast file system, like I said, for 30 years now. And, you know, the thing that's funniest about fast file system is every time there's a research paper saying, oh, there's this thing that's faster, Kirk just goes and implements it.
So he's literally the file system in of itself.
He is the guy.
Yes.
Then, you know, you've got ZFS, which is a huge, huge piece of software. It's doing a huge amount of work. I mean, it's, you know, it's got volume management. It does all the checksumming and all this kind of crazy stuff. One of the nice things, and I think this is already in 10, but definitely is better, you know, everything gets better with new versions. I've been telling people a lot about boot environments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, with ZFS, you can roll forward and roll back. Mm-hmm. It's got snapshots. So that means that, like, as a kernel developer mm-hmm. like myself, I can put a completely experimental thing on my laptop, which I did the other day. And then when that experiment fails spectacularly, I can roll back to a previous version.
It just doesn't ever just fail. It just has to just implode in on itself. As my own roommate, he has huge respect for you guys. I wish he was conscious enough to be right now. He has his own version of variant of Arch Linux called Ninja OS, which is like a more well-rounded, neutral stance. So it's like it does a lot of privacy and pen testing stuff, but it's a competent desktop. Like the GUI, like if you've ever used a Mac or Windows, you know exactly where to find stuff. And then when you open the command prompt, you have the same sort of tools for completely for free out there. And he respects you guys a lot for that. And he ran into a major, because he just, apparently I think he ran the video player and it didn't work. And it causes huge problem with the whole distribution method of doing all the files back on Arch. So like he literally spent, I saw him like sit there and watch him for like 4 days just sorting that all out because he had to put them on USB sticks for them to be brought here, which thankfully came out in time, but I've never seen him sweat. I've seen him sweat less at his job than doing this sort of stuff. So, but yeah, he was always like, he has mad props to you guys. So, because we do have some active IRC stuff, and I do want to ask more general questions, but
sure.
We'd throw you right here because, like, you're awake. You're more awake than I am, so ask this stuff.
I've had one coffee.
We'll try to work on that. Now, the good thing, as we said, is that you guys are not kind of the Linux bear, and we'll get into that in a moment. But someone in our IRC wants to ask, what do you think about the trying to cross breed the Ubuntu BSD crossover?
like the KBSD stuff and the Debian BSD.
There's that's what I'm assuming. Yeah, because there's like that's starting to experiment now. Like so
there's a bunch of people. There's a bunch of people who've tried that. I mean, I think it's interesting. I'm unlikely to use it myself just because I'm always using FreeBSD. But you know, the project is really, you know, we're not anti-fork.
Yeah.
So if people want to, you know, you want to try that, go for it, see how it goes.
And what would you think would be the advantages to crossing them over? Do you think people just would do that just for like see if they could do it?
I think some people do it because they want to see if they can do it. Yeah. That's definitely true. I mean, certainly one of the things that I talk a lot about in terms of FreeBSD is, you know, we're really good about stability and kernel APIs.
Yeah.
So for instance, like in FreeBSD 10. You know, 10.0, 10.1, 10.2, 10.3, you know, we don't change kernel APIs at random.
Right.
So that means if you had something that ran on 10.0, it's going to run on 10.3.
Right.
So that means that anything that's kernel-based, that's sitting in the kernel, is going to be really stable throughout the two-year release process.
And so when you know something works, it doesn't work, and you need to look into that or report that back to you guys on some end because... Yeah, that's one of the things, you know, because, like, I remember my roommate was telling me about this while she was here, that when you have Linux, like, you have, there's, like, a ton of people out there, like, you know, you're just putting that distro out there and sending it through and, you know, and doing the testing and stuff, but you got so many different voices and there's so many different variants that's, you know, that's why he just started making his own as NinjaOS, because it's like, you know, good luck out there, I might as well just start making it out myself. Well, with FreeBSD and, like, that sort of platform, that's all I have to hear about is that, like, it's like a I don't want to say small in a bad way, but like small hardcore guys, but like what works works, and you guys strive a lot to try to make sure that it's stable and that it works.
Well, and we have this thing in the project which is the principle of least astonishment, HOLA. So before we let someone add something crazy even within like a single release, you know, we weigh its effect on our users. Right, we're like, okay, well, is this going to change the system in such a way that it's really surprising to someone who already is familiar with FreeBSD?
Right.
We don't want to do that, right?
Right.
We want to be able to advance, but we also don't change things at random because that's really difficult. Like, we don't have the thing of someone has a whim, and they're like, oh, you know, I'm totally going to just rewrite this thing this way. And we're like, yeah, not so much, because it turns out people depend on that. Right.
So like, oh, we tried to do this, but use like that, you know, the like, you know, Linux people have GNOME, which didn't, like, what?
Yeah,
like, explain, like, the logic progression to that,
Yeah, and it means that, you know, from the outside, it looks like FreeBSD sometimes moves slowly.
Right.
Right? Because, but we like to think of it as carefully.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, I think we're doing pretty well right now.
Speaking about crazy stuff, so one more interesting question while my brain starts to... Remembering questions I was going to ask is, I don't know if he means you personally or if the free BSD people use this in general, but do you use rsync? Where, when, why, what, how?
You can use rsync on FreeBSD, but for what, to what end? I mean...
They just asked if you used it. I don't think they had any...
I mean, people can use it. It's still there, but it's not like... That's not how we do distributions or anything crazy. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the question means.
I'm not sure. Like I said, this is a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
This is like way, way early Sunday morning.
Someone has rsync on the brain.
Oh, yeah. So just going through that, so like I said, you know, like more stable releases stuff. Now, one of the things that might really surprise people, maybe not out there, but it surprised me a while ago, is that like you think, oh, yeah, like BSD, you know, it's like that thing. And like they're like, as some people call it, like it's like kind of like, in a good way, like sort of the evangelicals of the tech world, you know, it's like you guys have a good thing and you go around people's doors like, hi, can you listen to our Lord and Savior, Damon, you know, going around knocking in, can we have a talk here with our like methodologies?
Yeah, we try not to be the Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
But
not in like a rude way, not like
exactly.
That, but like,
not
you know, just like, hey, if
nine.
You've noticed this, we would be more than happy to explain this.
Yeah,
kind of like what your booth has been doing.
Yeah.
It's been garnering some good attention here. But let's see where I was going with this. Is that, and I actually just realized I didn't know where I was going with this. Okay. So, that you do go out in there, and so a lot of people think that's like some real fringe thing, but one of the implementations of this platform is something that a lot of people use everywhere, which is Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And what was their reasoning that they told you that to go on to just do the biggest streaming distribution platform for that.
So the folks that they hired to do the streaming platform mm-hmm. actually were FreeBSD developers. And
oh, so they originally came from you guys.
Yeah. So the team there, you know, so they needed a they needed a thing to do their caching servers. So their caching servers are all running FreeBSD.
Right.
And they're very open about that, which is totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the team they hired was a bunch of people who had done FreeBSD for a long time. They were core developers, and they're like, yeah, we can build you a caching server. And they did. I mean, their caching servers, you know, they publish this now. They're getting 80 gigabits out of that thing right now.
Yeah.
So they're serving 80 gigabits of cached video data to the net all the time. And it's amazing because, you know, that means that FreeBSD is actually serving one-third of the internet. Right, because Netflix now accounts for one-third of the
internet. Right, and like Keel and Peele episodes can't like just store and arc themselves. Yeah. So that's like one of the main things of that, you know, like it's the same thing with our, you know, we see the visual thing and it's like off to the side. We don't realize like how ingrained in something that we like use every day, you know, has something in there as its background.
And if you want to look at places where FreeBSD is used, I mean, it's not just Netflix. Like the PS3 and the PS4, that's FreeBSD.
Mm-hmm.
So your Sony PlayStations are running FreeBSD. Pretty much every storage vendor, so Isilon, NetApp, Panasonic, Compellent, who was bought by Dell. Anyone building a storage appliance has actually used FreeBSD. Those things have been using FreeBSD mm-hmm. for 10 to 15 years. I mean, NetApp's been around for quite a while. So that's all FreeBSD-based. Juniper routers, those are FreeBSD-based.
See, you're starting to now more notice, you know, than what you originally thought before. That's why I wanted to lead in the question, question like that.
So yeah, so we wound up being used in tons of places. I mean, I've worked at places that use them. It was FreeBSD.
Was that like a sudden thing, or was this just doing hard work and people noticing?
So there's a couple reasons. There's a bunch. I think there's several reasons people wind up using FreeBSD. One is the license, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're building an appliance or, you know, some sort of device that you're going to hand to someone else and you can't just keep rolling software on your website.
Right.
You know, a lot of people, legal departments in particular, prefer the BSD license because the BSD license effectively, and I am not a lawyer, says, you know.
Neither am I.
Yeah. Please use my code and don't sue me. Right. Like it's really simple. There's none of this like you must give it back. You must do this. You must, you know, spit nickels or whatever.
Right.
You must pay obedience to Stallman. Like, we don't have that.
It's just like, so, this is my free time. If it works for you.
If it works for you, that's great.
It's great. If not.
And if you want to contribute back, please do. Like, and the companies do, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of them contribute money to the foundation to help fund the project. But, you know, some of them also contribute code back because they know that they don't want. It's an engineering question, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
If you have diffs from the kernel that are not, or even from user space, that are not relevant to your secret sauce, then you want to feed them back because then you don't have to apply that diff every time you update.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, forklift
upgrades.
You get
that all at once, yeah.
Exactly. Forklift upgrades, like you've got a company and you shipped a product on, say, FreeBSD 8,
mm-hmm.
right? And now we've got FreeBSD 11 coming out. You know, most companies will do this thing of, they do the release and they do a bunch of maintenance, but they don't prepare for the next release.
Right.
Well, at least if they're feeding their patches back into the main tree, they don't have to deal with that the next time.
That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that way their eye is on like the prize of making sure that release gets out there,
works.
And
exactly.
As opposed to like constantly like chasing, like if you want people want to experiment with that, they can do that. But in terms of getting stuff out there, we should adopt that for Hope 1 year. We actually do stuff for people who have a hard time like conceptualizing. It's almost kind of the same way like 2600 works to some degree. Like you know we're not like. I mean, there's a certain amount of money of like in order to like print actual paper issues, but like you know, no one's out there. It's just sort of, hi, here's a cool thing. This is what I found about it. If it's BS, please write to me. That's BS, so I can make this better. You know, and it's like it's the same methodology, except now this is an actual like usable environment for a machine.
Right. Exactly.
So getting to more of the community aspect of it before I ask more crazy questions here. This community, so everyone keeps thinking, like, you know, BSD, FreeBSD, it's like this, there's the demon, and it's like,
I'm wearing the demon today, but you can't
he's
see
cute.
The demon on radio.
I know, but he's really cute, trust me. Looks a lot better than half the people on here yesterday night. And, like, it's like everyone pictures, like, these, like, shout-out secret organization people of, like, old men in hoodies typing away. Like, is that all, like, internet stuff? Do you guys physically meet up? Like, tell the whole community around that.
So, actually, yeah, and it's
what interesting. The dark hoodies with the old guys?
Yeah, the dark hoodies. Well, I'm one of the old guys, but I don't have a dark hoodie with me.
I don't know.
Because it's like...
I've seen way, way older.
Well, it's also 91 degrees today, so I'm not wearing a dark hoodie at all. That would just be terrible. So the, you know, the project organizes itself a lot, very much online, but also through conferences. So
there's like full-on conventions?
Yeah. So there's three major BSD conferences every year. There's Asia BSD in Tokyo. There's BSD Cannes, which is in Ottawa, Canada. That's sort of the North America conference. And then there's EuroBSD, and EuroBSD moves around every year. So this coming year... It's a traveling con. So each... it's kind of interesting because it's an interesting model. It does result in some interesting choices. So like last year was in Stockholm. This year it'll be in Belgrade. You know, every year it's a different place. So it's going to be there in
October. I already noticed a pattern between free speech and liquor.
Yeah, it's well, you know, there we've been in many places. Milan was one, Strasbourg. It depends really on who organizes that one. So anyway, there's three major conferences, and, you know, those are like, you know, there's call for papers and the whole routine. But associated with all of those, there's always a dev summit. So the dev summit is, you know, where we get, you know, 100, 200 of us in a room, and like we map out what are we going to do in FreeBSD 12? What do we need to fix from FreeBSD 11? I run something called the Vendor Summit. So we get all these guys like NetApp and Isilon and all them in the room, Juniper, Sony, everyone in the room. And then we're like, okay, so what do you got that you want to put in the tree?
So it's kind of like a hackathon, but for like upper level people.
There's definitely hacking going on, but it's more of an organization-a-thon. Like, you know, how are we going to get stuff into the tree, and how are we going to get patches in, and, you know, are there things that, you know, the developers in the project haven't thought about that people really care about, right? So, you know, people finally got really annoyed, and they're like, let's finally do the graphics thing, right? So, you know, on open source operating systems, all of them, right?
You've seen
what Linux has to say about NVIDIA, right?
Yes.
You know, it's really difficult to get the graphics stuff working, and it's always different on every one. So, you know, we'll come up with these efforts, and then, you know, like networking, and you know, years ago we did SMP. This all gets organized through developer summits, and those are usually done at the three major conferences every year, and then there's smaller developer meetings. So we've got one coming up in Cambridge.
They're kind of like the 2600 groups or whatever. You just hang out and like do like mass installs and stuff like that.
A little more. So for the kernel developers, it's a little more developer focused. Like Nicebug, who are here in New York, they do these install fests, which are totally cool, right? So it gets new people in, and it's like, look, here's an image. You can run it on your BeagleBone, or you can run it in a virtual machine, or you can run it on your laptop. You know, that's quite cool. The kernel developer and the core developer meetings, core is the wrong word, but the kernel developer meetings, the meetings where the source team gets together, really are more about feature set. So, you know, when we started, when 10 gig hardware started coming out, and I've done a lot of work on high performance networking stuff. So, you know, we got a bunch of the networking people in a room, and we're like, okay, so what are the things we've got to change in our network stack to make it so that 10 gig is good? You know, because
everyone's hands went up.
There were a lot of whiteboards. There were actually at BSD Cannes. It's always these. We're at a university, so it's the old style green board with chalk. It's
hilarious. Lord.
I feel so old when I use those. Anyway, but that's what the you can think of it a bit like the plumbers conference.
Guys
do. But you know, it's we've got like 100 of us, and it's not, you know, you don't have to pay to go. I mean, it's a small amount of money. You don't have to be a member of the Linux Foundation or the FreeBSD Foundation.
Because one of the things my roommate talks about is that he used to try to go to Linux group meetups, and I'm not calling out on any sort of things. I've heard Lug is great. He's had great things to say about Lug, but like when he's gone through a lot of different ones, that he feels like the difference here is he says when you go up to a meetup and it's FreeBSD, like you guys want to talk about FreeBSD, you want to talk about the content, stabilization, getting, you know, the code, stuff like that out there, and that's what you guys want to talk about. He says when he goes to a lot of Linux organizations, because so many people are using it and stuff, you feel like that, oh yeah, there's some code, there's like coding stuff and like new updates going on, but it's like advertising to sell you something to being used on that. Yeah, so it's just sort of like, you know, use our, you know, this is like blah, 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 and because of our new like distribution platform, they're hoping people will adopt, so it's more kind of like the, like I guess like, well, it's like free culture, but with capitalism, and it's like sort of like when is like that sort of mix kind of like becomes toxic, and he's starting to think that with like some of the Linux groups that that's where it's going. While he sees with the FreeBSD and his experience that, you know, even though you guys have a lot of different partners, and that, you know, whether it's a corporation or a little person, it's like it's just making sure that it's stable and that it's doing stuff that everyone wants it to be done, and that people are contributing, and that's as good as it needs to be, as opposed to just trying to sell people stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I don't interact directly with a lot of the Linux groups, so I can't really comment on
it. I know, like I said, we're not crapping on Linux groups. This is my friend's experience, who can't be here, and then he's going to punch me later, but yeah.
Well, but yeah, in terms of the way we do, like, you know, I wind up giving a lot of talks on FreeBSD, mm-hmm. so, you know, there's a talk online you can find called FreeBSD is not a Linux distro. Mm-hmm. And it's actually me explaining the difference between, like, how the two systems
I hope you
work.
Guys submit something for 2018.
Oh, for...
For Hope.
For Hope?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, we didn't this time, but it's, you know, it's certainly mm-hmm. possible.
Well, no, I understand you want to, like, test, see what it's like here in person, see how truly terrible people get. And, yeah, but no, we're always, like... I've seen like the choosing process for like panel stuff, and it's absolutely like amazing, ridiculous of like all the awesome stuff. Mm. And then what's even more amazing is the stuff that's like, okay, so 15 different people submit a thing on the same topic with the same result, like that sort of stuff. So like it's something like, you know, hey, we're doing this thing, you know, like with FreeBSD or something that will like really stick out, because we don't really get a lot of submissions for stuff like that.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I'll definitely look into that. Mm-hmm. I think I missed the call for papers this time, but
that's fine. A lot of people did.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, I think what was it in 2007 or 2011? There was actually like the conference was done here for NYBug, I think, that went up. Yeah.
So yeah, NYBug has done a conference every couple of years here in New York City. So there's a bunch of the, I guess we would call them regional conferences.
Yeah.
So you get NYBug organizes one here. The last one was at Cooper Union. We used to be up at
and for everyone confused, BUG standing for
BSD User Group. Yes. The New York City BSD User Group.
Yeah, it's not the bed bugs that are at the hotel. That's a whole different thing. If that's that's an actual problem. If you have you know, NYBug, like FreeBSD NYBug, that's good. Those are the good bugs.
Yes, but if you have bed bugs, it's a problem.
Yes.
So anyway, so NYBug every couple of years has done a conference. It's been really good. Mm-hmm. About 100 people.
Mostly
that's
like jokes.
Yeah,
like good humor in that group, I think.
Yeah, they're a pretty amusing group. They've got a meetup every month over at the Stone Inn. I forget the name of the bar. Anyway, their website shows it. Mm-hmm. I've given a bunch of talks for them, mm-hmm. and other people have too. So you get NYBug does their stuff, which is great, and then you've got a bunch of the other sort of these regional. There's like Meet BSD out in California every couple of years, and they all coordinate, right? So. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the big three, the ones I mentioned earlier.
Right.
But then all the regionals actually coordinate through a mailing list saying, hey, we're planning to do a thing in October of this year. We don't want to overlap with anybody
else.
It's
like the synergy going and stuff, yeah.
Well, and also now there's enough events going on that... So it used to be you could kind of, if you were a kernel developer, you could make it to every one.
Yeah.
And now you can't. Because you've got stuff like people have been doing things in Brazil and, you know, another. There was just a meetup thing in Taiwan. And then we've got VeriSign, who actually also uses FreeBSD. VeriSign does VBSDCon down in Virginia mm-hmm. every couple of years. NYBug does something every couple of years. MeetBSD does something in California every couple of years.
I was talking about this with Cheshire earlier, who was the last person to run TAP and doing a lot of the phone freak stuff. That's amazing when you think of, hey, like, I'm really into this, and I have friends into this, and we should do this thing. And it goes on, and then you have no idea. Next thing you know, they're like, there's someone doing it in Brazil.
Yep.
Like, it goes that fast. Like, you blink and it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, and Brazil is actually been doing a lot of stuff. There's a bunch of developers down there now.
Is there like a, do you notice that, like, when it's in other, like, outside the United States, is there like a different perspective to the BSD, or do you think that's like, if this crosses borders, sort of the platform?
So definitely the technical stuff all crosses borders. What's mm-hmm. interesting is how operating systems move.
Yeah.
So for instance, you know, people are like, why is there so much FreeBSD in Japan? So it turns
turns out
one of our developers years and years ago did a port of FreeBSD to an architecture called PC98, which was this crazy.
Oh yeah,
thing,
no,
right?
Everyone had that.
Right, done by the Japanese. And since it was available and it was open source, everyone was like, "Well, I'll run this." And so we got this huge community right out of that. Right. So in Brazil, there've always been a small number of Brazilian developers on FreeBSD. Mm-hmm. I think it probably comes out of one of the universities. I'm not really sure. But, mm-hmm. you know, you see it in different places based on where people are. So, you know, if you look at, like, so AsiaBSDCon came about because mm-hmm. one of the other guys on the project is very good at conning me into work, and I'm good at conning other people into work.
Is that why it's called a con?
no, but there you go. So when I lived in Japan for 4 years, 04 to 08.
Oh, cool.
And when I was there...
Tokyo, okay.
Yeah. And so one of the other developers was like, yeah, we haven't had an AsiaBSDCon in a while. Why don't you start one? And then I got a bunch of people who could actually run a conference. One of our guys, Hiroki Sato, is the guy who really does the
work. Love how they just assigned you. Like, it's just
wouldn't it be nice
this
if...
Guy, yeah, wouldn't yeah. this... Yeah. No, because usually the first year or someone shows up is like, I have a ton of video games, and it's like, so I'm just going to now start this, and then it becomes its own convention.
Yep.
Like... That's this scene. That's basically how Hope kind of got started. Actually, if you didn't know, real quick, the way Hope kind of got started was that Emmanuel and friends, they went out and they saw a lot of the hacker scene in Europe, like the Chaos Computer
BrewCon
and stuff like that, and were like really impressed and were sort of like, that's awesome. Why don't we have that here? And so they wanted to kind of bring that flavor back to the United States, and I think it's succeeded so far, maybe in terms of today morning, probably a little bit too well. but going back to the platform, so are you guys now, like, when you're looking for on the platform, like, because now it's you see stuff at, you know, there's a lot of different groups outside the United States. Are you guys trying to like trying to close like language barrier stuff to get like more synergy going between different nation groups? And
so one of the things that FreeBSD does really well, and I probably post on our internal IRC about this once a week, is documentation.
Yeah.
So we have a huge documentation group.
And one people of the, are like, what's that?
What's that?
A lot of those people out there are like, what's that? Yeah.
Oh, you wanted a man page? Why would you want a man page?
Yeah. No one needs that.
The documentation group has been going since pretty much the beginning of the project, mm-hmm. and they have done really amazing work to make it easier and easier for people to translate you know, FreeBSD documentation into foreign language, non-English languages.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's really good documentation in Japanese and in Mandarin and in Korean, as well as in German mm-hmm. and Italian, all those other languages. I gave a talk on FreeBSD at Chulalongkorn, which is the biggest school in Thailand.
Yeah, yeah.
And it turns out one of the guys there had been on the Thai translation team. So there's a Thai translation of the BSD stuff. And the docs team has really done a great job of that kind of outreach.
Where would you like to see this like expand to in terms of a region that like hasn't really popped up on the radar for you guys yet?
So one of the places we're hoping to find more developers is India,
right?
You know, one of the things that, if you know anything about the market for Indian developers, a lot of the folks there, unless they really want to stay in India, they come to the US anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got huge universities there. You've
and
got
if you think it's competitive in the United States, go over to that, where it's, like, both foreign and domestic, and it's very app-centric.
Yep. And so, you know, we definitely are hoping to expand there. The foundation, which we support the project, have really expanded the areas that we get directors from. So I'm a director of the foundation, but we've got a director in Germany. We've got one in Japan. You know, we're definitely looking to branch out regionally. I'm really hoping that a lot of the Brazil stuff takes off and becomes a lot more coherent. It seems that it's like one or two people in each place going, oh, hey, I want to do this thing, which is great.
You might want to have them, because if I remember correctly, because like I said, Sunday morning, but that if I remember correctly, there is, probably not Brazil, in Buenos Aires, there's the Echo Party, which is biggest, if not one of the biggest, hacker and security conventions in Latin America.
Oh, wow.
And so that's one of the things that, you know, I personally keep trying to bring up is, like, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, we're in this thing. And it's like, yeah, you know, even though it's, like, the next country over, it's like you actually have a lot more around you than you thought you did. And, talking together and stuff. That's always been important. So, quick question here. So, the whole thing is that's, you know, FreeBSD, OpenBSD, there's a whole, like, there's a free culture sort of origin out of that, which, you know, came from, do you want to explain that, like,
sure.
Berkeley? And
so, I don't want to give Kirk McCusick gives a very good 1 hour talk on this whole topic, but I can give the summary.
Next year, next Hope 12.
Hope 12, 2 years from now. So, you know, Berkeley Unix was developed at Berkeley. BSD was developed at Berkeley in the 70s and 80s as a research platform in part for the internet.
Yeah.
Right. So Loeffler and all these folks did the original TCP/IP implementation. That's right. Where we get the original internet from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had been doing that for years, and they did want to be able to both use it when they left the university
mm-hmm.
and, you know, get it out there for free. So, you know, they went through the process of dealing with the university's lawyers. Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm super happy.
This
that
now
was
explains
not,
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Not my issue. But, and, you know, with all they really wanted was not the sort of copyleft thing. They're like, look, we just want people to use our code, and we don't want the university sued.
Yeah.
Of course, the university did get sued by AT&T for other reasons, which
well,
you can go look up on the internet.
Well, it's AT&T.
Yeah,
you know,
that. But, you know, that's where the original Berkeley license, there was the four-clause license mm-hmm. and then the three-clause license,
right,
and now we're down to
two
clauses, right? And I think two is probably where we're going to be.
It's the good downward spiral.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the original ones was the advertising. So if you use the code, you had to actually, in your boot message, say, I used code from Berkeley. And we removed that. I don't even remember when we removed that, but that's been removed. That, I think, was the first clause to go. And, you know, so now we're down to the two clause.
Was that, like, was that something that people in the community spoke up about? Like, was that just something people didn't want? Or was it just we don't need this anymore?
I don't think anybody really could. So we don't have a lot of fights about licenses.
Yeah.
In the community. We're kind of like, yep.
That's what essentially I'm trying to get to.
Yeah, it's like,
it.
All right, so, yeah, this is even easier. Cool, that's great, we're done. Like, we don't have a lot right. of brouhaha about that. We don't wring our hands over, like,
mm-hmm.
two clause, three clause, four clause.
Yeah.
Actually, one of the biggest problems we had in licensing was someone had put in it's Paul Henning, okay. had done the beerware license, which was,
I've never heard of this.
If you like this code, buy me a beer. And
oh, God.
And that's fine when you're, like, a bunch of open source developers.
It's
like okay,
12
whatever.
People, yeah.
Right. But then when, like, IBM wants to take your code and use mm-hmm. your code, and the lawyers are like, well, how many beers?
Yeah.
How many beers do we owe this person?
Right.
So that
how many
was
employees do I
so,
have?
So now we're very yeah. regular. It's just the BSD
how many
license,
employees
right?
do not want to have a bonus this
yeah,
year?
Exactly. So, so that all started at CSRG at the University of California, Berkeley. Mm-hmm. Eventually, CSRG breaks up, right? They're like,
yeah.
okay, we're done. No more research project. You know, they've all gone off. Bill Joyle has long gone off to do Sun.
Right.
And then, you know, a bunch of folks go off.
Like literally falling into the Sun, but that's a whole different
story. Well, there's
right?
that. You know, a bunch of folks go off and mm-hmm. do BSDOS, which was a commercial version of BSD.
Right, a lot of people
yep.
forget about that. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, and then they're like, well, what are we going to do? Yeah. And you get, there was 386 BSD, and that didn't last very long. And then there's NetBSD.
Yeah, that's the other one I remember.
And
the
NetBSD
yeah.
folks, they're still around. Their focus is on, we're going to run on everything. So I think NetBSD still runs on a VAX, right? And I'm like,
yeah,
that's
no, that's their like
great, but I live
first
in a small
thing,
apartment.
Yeah. It's the first so, thing that always comes out of their mouth is like, we're on VAX, we're on anything.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's cool.
Yes.
But so they do, and they do a lot of really interesting work. You know, we share things back and forth between all the BSDs. So you've got the NetBSD folks doing that, and their thing is broad platform,
mm-hmm.
and to some extent, they tried to continue the research arm. FreeBSD's original thing, and the reason I wound up using free over mm-hmm. net, so I started on commercial Unix before any of those, and then I was working at the University of California.
So you saw the light and converted.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't so much that. It was like, I really want a free one of these because they're really expensive. I don't have $1,000.
It's free.
Yeah, it's free, and I can run it. And so I ran NetBSD when I was living in Europe. I ran NetBSD 0.9 when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
But then eventually when I moved back to the States, I'm a big fan of laptops.
Right.
I do not like being in a place.
I'm here for the past like 8 years for me, yeah.
I had a TRS-80 Model 100 right after college, which is that ridiculous
yeah.
non-laptop 32K
yeah, I know.
Ridiculousness. I really
yeah.
don't like being in an office.
We're like, we have to explain to like younger people
yeah.
that, you
once
know,
upon
people
a
my
time.
Age, it's, no, it's like, you know, it's like, this was a laptop, like it was a joke, and then someone took the joke too far.
Right.
And that's
and
why
they,
you have phones in your
it.
Pocket, yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, so I was always into laptops, and FreeBSD, its focus at the time was rock solid performance on x86.
Right.
And actually,
yeah, that
was
its core. Yeah,
right?
yeah,
that
yeah.
was the thing. And I'm like, and so I installed that on a Winbook, which
mm-hmm.
was an ancient laptop, and it didn't. Nothing just
now
works,
I feel old.
But it, well, yeah. but it worked,
yeah.
and it was like, okay, this is what I want. And also, I'm a network
yeah.
person. Like, I do TCP/IP, and I do all kinds of high performance
right.
networking. So the BSD stack has always been the canonical TCP/IP stack that people use. Like everyone
right,
uses
everyone
it,
uses
every
that, yeah.
system. So, you know, for me, it was like, okay, well, I'm running this thing on my laptop, which also now I can tinker with the TCP/IP stack I want to tinker with.
Right.
Right. So then that was it. And then I wound up just using, I was a user of FreeBSD. Mm-hmm. I probably committed, you know.
How many platforms are supported for FreeBSD now?
So FreeBSD currently supports AMD 64, which is the 64-bit Intel, i386, 32-bit, ARM v7, ARM v8. Mm-hmm. So we've got 64-bit ARM support. We just had people doing RISC-V, which is a research instruction set architecture from Berkeley. Well, it's funny because we're all like, yeah, we'll see how far RISC-V gets.
Right, yeah, and then all of a sudden it's like...
But it is Patterson.
Yeah.
Right, like it's the guy who wrote the book, so he might be able to get away with it. And it's the nice thing about RISC-V is it's unencumbered by patents.
Yeah. Right?
So it's like, okay, look, you know, it's kind of an open source.
You can legit experiment with
like,
it, yeah.
There you go. Go build whatever crazy stuff you want to build. It's free. So we're running on RISC-V now, which is kind of intense. Spark 64, which we've always had, PowerPC 64, but there's different tiers.
Right.
So, like, tier one is currently AMD 64 and i386, and I believe ARM v8.
Is that tier in priority or tier in just progress for you guys?
The tiering really has to do with can the thing be self-hosted. So we've got kind of an old, we have a very, I think, sort of an antiquated view of tiering.
Mm-hmm.
So tiering for us is, can you build the package system, which is 24,000 ports of everything
and
in the
out
sun,
there.
On natively on the hardware. So, I mean, you can do that on a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
It'll take a couple weeks. People are doing that now. We're trying to do it on faster machines. That was the nice thing about, you know, ARM 64.
I was just about to ask, what's the next, real quick, the next platform that you've
ARM 64 is the big new one. I mean, definitely RISC-V is going to be there because we've got a bunch of, there's a huge number of people who do research with FreeBSD.
Right.
So there's people who are really interested in that. But ARM 64 is the new up-and-comer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, AMD 64 is stable and we'll keep making changes as things change in the chips and things change in the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no real innovation from Intel in that. And there's like, you know, they've had a...
They're moving on to Watson and digging other things, yeah.
They had transactional memory and that didn't work.
Yeah.
It turns out, and you know, now they've got this SGX stuff, we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's not a whole new instruction set architecture.
Whereas
like ARM 64 is not completely new because it's like ARM, like previous ARMs, but 64 bits. But that's the big new thing.
Okay. Cool about that. And what I was supposed to get to with the whole the fact that it is, you know, the FreeBSD and sort of the open. So do you, speaking of like organizations like Wikipedia in New York City, do you reach out and talk to other free culture people in the area?
Yeah, so the foundation actually, one of the reasons we wound up at Hope, one of the reasons we've been going to conferences that aren't traditionally BSD. So for many years, you know, the foundation sponsors a lot of conferences, right? So we'll sponsor BSD Canon, but they're all always BSD.
Yeah,
related,
that's
right?
always the core
so
thing, yeah.
We're talking to people we already know.
Yeah, it's echo chamber effect, yeah.
So the last year or two, we've been branching out and, you know, we go to OSCON, which we've gone to for a few years. OSCON, we've been doing a lot of stuff about women in technology, so Women Courage.
Perfect.
And, yeah, Women Courage and one, oh, what is the name of it? There's one more women in technology conference that we went to this year. So yeah, we've definitely been branching out into sort of other areas. Also, we got heavily involved in the reproducible builds work.
Oh, cool! I didn't know that.
Yeah. So after
could you explain that to our
sure. After Heartbleed, which you know was highly
no
amazing.
Background that we all know that.
Yeah, well. everyone go look up Heartbleed. Look, there's a website. But after Heartbleed, a whole bunch of open source folks, you know, not just the BSDs, but all, you know, the Linux distros and Apaches and all these folks, they're like, okay, so the only way we're going to be able to deal with these 0 days that show up is to actually have, you know, reproducible builds of our software, which means that if you, you know, take a set of canonical bits from some period and turn a crank, you get the same thing every time. And that way you can tell.
When something's,
you know,
like, what happened
here?
Yeah,
what happened here?
Yeah.
So we got very heavily involved in that. Google actually has organized that effort among the open source community. So Google actually has a great open source office. That's the folks who do Summer of Code.
Yeah.
You know, Chris DeBona and Kat Allman. And
this
all
this is the
there.
Stuff that Google tries to hide behind their corporate facades.
They actually don't. I mean, if you're an open source, they're really good.
Yeah.
You know, they come to you. They're really good.
In the same way you guys are like coming branching out to start like get away stigmas about, like, you know, good or bad, you know, and just seeing, like, your content and platform as what it is. That's part of the thing that we also do on Radio Statler, and Hope is just sort of like, you know, diffusing that sort of like, hey, like, here's people's expectations when they go into it. We're not saying that it is that, but, you know, this is what's here, and, like, now you can make up your own mind on
it
instead of something that you've heard from someone else, you know?
Yeah, so anyway, so we've been branching out in that way. And, you know, I would say we have really good relationships with like, other tools developers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, Rust and Go and all these new languages that everybody are
doing. Yeah. Especially Rust,
yeah. Yeah, they all, I love Rust. I think Rust is totally cool. I fell in love with Rust because one of their guys, Steve Blanc, mm-hmm. I forget his last name. But Steve was at editorial board meeting for a magazine I work on. Mm-hmm. And talked to him, and he seemed really interesting. Well, it turns out he's an English major, and he wrote their manual. So it's one of the actually only readable, like, computer language books you're ever going to read.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, this seems really cool. So now I'm really enamored of Rust. We're looking at using it in a project completely unrelated to FreeBSD.
Like I said, you know, having good documentation and being able to come over for whether you're up there or down there is very important to get something onto your coding platform.
Yep.
So just thinking some. So I guess as we're gonna wrap up here, even though I don't know if anyone else is coming on, just in case, if they want to reach out to FreeBSD, if they want to contribute and help out and, like, find out more about it or to install on their own, like, what are the places, the portals they can check their stuff out?
Sure. So if they go to FreeBSD.org, there's a button that says Get FreeBSD Now. You can download images for all kinds of crazy embedded stuff right now, as well as, you know, the standard ISOs and everything to install on an x86 box. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want an SD image for, like, your BeagleBone Black or your Raspberry Pi, those are all up there. And there's also, you know, virtualized images as well for VMware and VirtualBox and all these other, you know, virtualization technologies. So if you just go to FreeBSD.org and click on Get FreeBSD, you'll find all the possible things that you would install on.
And if they want, and once they are on that, and maybe they found a new interesting use that people may have not thought of it before, or maybe even being crazy enough to spend, like 4 years underground pouring it to some new crazy esoteric platform, where would they be able to reach out for their local communities for that?
So the local communities, nice buggies around here.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, for us, we still organize through mailing lists, which makes us old school. But all the mailing lists are also on the main page. You can click on the mailing lists, you know, join up and start reading stuff like FreeBSD Current, which talks about the latest things we're doing.
And also just to clarify, old school, is this... you have the main forwarding email, and you email that with certain stuff in the message, and then you're on? Or is that, like, you put in your information, and then now you're automatically in that?
You can do it either way. Mm-hmm. It's mailman, right? It's all mailman lists.
Yes.
Yeah, right,
everyone
knows
they did that.
Yeah.
Cool. And I guess, so since this is your, like, first experience at being here at Hope as, like, a vendor, how's been the experience so far?
Oh, it's been amazing. It's been really, first of all, it's really great to sit at the table and, like, talk to people, because I actually like doing that. And lots of people come up and ask.
We need more of you.
Well, lots of people come up and ask interesting questions. They're like, okay, so, you know, I run Linux at work. Tell me about why I would run FreeBSD, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, we get to talk to them about that. That's been really great. You know, the sessions have been good. The other thing for me is I do a lot of security work generally.
Yeah.
And so it's been old home week. Like, people I didn't know would be here. I ran into Matt Blaze and his student Sandy and a bunch of other folks that I know who are here.
I am legit shocked that, like, it's gotten to the point where I don't even know if I want to come the next con, because it's like over 2/3 of the people either call out my handle online or the first part of my real name, to the point where it's almost like, hey, yeah, you do the radio and you did that thing with the Yes Men. I'm like, cool stuff. And I send them away. I'm like, who is that person?
Yeah.
Like, it's gotten to, like, that point.
Yeah. So the hallway track has been amazing, right? It's just running into people I know, and then they introduce other people, so that's been really good.
Any any interesting vendors you were unfortunate enough to be paired up with
as
neighbors?
No, our neighbors were actually our neighbors on the left were the Hackaday folks, and they had cookies. So they had black and white cookies.
Oh, yeah, they always bring snacks and games. That's how they try to win over everybody.
I'm a New York boy, right? I'm from the Bronx.
And then all of a sudden you had $80, and you're wondering where the heck that went to, and you knew it wasn't the booze that night.
Yeah, but, you know, anyone who brings black and white cookies, I like them. So they were good.
Kids, if you want to have FreeBSD first meeting on your platform, bring black and white cookies.
There you go.
There you go.
And coffee.
What's been the most exciting, like like in terms of like, because you've been at the venue, I don't know if you've seen like any of the panels or just looked at stuff, like what was the most interesting thing that you've seen like in terms of like people speaking here?
So I didn't get to as many panels as I wanted because I was sitting at the table.
That's also why we're live streaming them through the website and we're still doing that thing in each different room.
So, you know, I've been overhearing some of them when we're sitting there. I actually really like the EFF panel. Like I've been, I've been a supporter of the EFF for many, many years. Mm. And, you know, it's nice to just have them talk about what they're working on.
Yeah.
You know, the Blaze and those folks did the State of the Union of crypto. That's always interesting to me. Those are kind of the two that I really remember. Mm-hmm. And yesterday it was mostly just tabling. So.
And later today, if you can survive Cryptome, they're going to be doing a talk about the Lynx NYC.
I really want to see
popping off everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cameras.
The moment I saw that, I'm like, I don't want to plug shit into that.
Yeah.
It just seems wrong.
Right. To charge your stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure it's perfectly fine.
And my favorite thing is to build hype. They've been tweeting of like directly like taking those things apart. Like they've actually been posting pictures of them like plugging in their own stuff and doing scanning and stuff. So I think that's like hilarious that they're literally like, it's
awesome.
Like you just set up and we're taking this apart and now we're going to talk about it. And it's like, you know, but we need that sort of dialogue out there because that's how you get things, you know, better.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's no way I would plug into one of those. So I'm really interested
and
to see
talk
what they have to say about it.
And to talk. What's been the most like shocking thing for you coming to Hope? A pleasant shock or just like something you weren't expecting for like this type of a con?
I guess the thing I wasn't expecting was the number of people I would actually already know.
Mm.
So, I grew up in New York City and then I was away for about 20 years and I've been back since 2008.
Yay.
And, you know, love New York, but every summer I'm usually traveling for work around the time of Hope. So this is the first year where I, like 3-4 months ago, I looked and I'm like, oh my God, I'm in town for Hope, right? I can actually go to this thing that is a subway ride from my house.
And you and 3,000 other people figured that too.
Yeah, so, but the thing that I, you know, having never been, it was like, I didn't really know which of the people I knew showed up. So, you know, I walk in and I keep hearing, like you were saying, you know, I keep hearing my name and I'm like, oh, okay, so this is kind of like Old Home Week because I know like 20 people here.
Oh, no, it's like when before you guys were here, it was like Fight Club, you know, where it's like the whole thing where it's like they show like the little scar and that's how they like we see those. That's why we were like, we need to eventually have them like at their own table here at least. Because it's like it started getting like unusual around here with just like the like just band meetups. I mean, we love stuff like that, but it was just sort of like a, you know, let's make it official here.
Yeah,
like they've
been
here long enough for multiple cons.
Right.
To kind of, you know, cement that in.
Yep. The other thing that I've been amused by is the fact that people seem to be able to get drinks into the hotel, which is not common in hotels. But I would expect that of a group of hackers.
I doubt it's ingenuity. I think honestly by this point they've given up.
That's also possible.
I think it's just
really... It does seem to be a somewhat lackadaisical environment.
One thing that did improve last time is, unfortunately, there was no bar at security.
Oh, normally security has their own bar?
Yeah, because here's the thing about it. Like, okay, so for future planning for Hope staff, as we're waiting for Shaft, if you can please, Shaft Patel, please come over here to talk about stuff. Like, I don't care if you're going to talk about static nipples for 5 hours. Just please show up. Not that you're great so far. I'm just, you know, he's supposed to. We're trying to do a schedule, and I'm the only one alive. You know, we running joke is that their whole thing is like, okay, we don't want chaos on Sunday morning. Like,
right.
You know, a lot of, we know people are going to come in drinking stuff and God knows what else, but we don't want it to be. And so every year they do the same thing. They put knock security and the radio all next to each other right across from the info booth.
Mm.
And those were all the AA people who work here hang out. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to think of like a similar scenario that's kind of like, you know, I don't know. It's like it's trying to like be like that one dry weed zone in Colorado.
Right.
Like, you know, it's like that sort of thing.
The one zone of reality.
Yeah, you know, it's being like, oh, God, you know, like you just concentrate everything there and there's no possible way anything to go wrong, especially since you have to walk by that to get to anything in this conference. It's like nothing could possibly go wrong with that.
Yeah, what could possibly go
wrong? Yes. But interesting thing, though, that you brought up about like, you know, okay, so someone wants to bring it to a new platform, do this modification to it. It's just sort of like, okay, we're not saying no, we're not discouraging you. We just want to like you know, where this idea come from, where you're taking it, and
yeah, exactly.
how well does it work, sort of thing. Very similar methodology for stuff at Hope. So, for example, I remember, and I still can't believe this was an actual, like, kind of controversy, was whether we should bring the makers and make magazine to the Hope Conference
right.
and to hacker conferences in general. And it's not that we haven't had hardware stuff before, but, like, this was, like, you know, it's been there, but it, like, really kicked off because now you have microcontrollers and they're at an affordable rate and everything, and kids are doing fun stuff with them, and, like, it's on the news and stuff, so we're, like, you know, do, you know, we have a bunch of people and, like, they're into hardware, but maybe not a lot of them have known about, like, think about stuff, you know, exploitably, or they do not want, you know, or just, like, hey, new thing, or, like, that sort of stuff that you'd see at, like DEF CON and stuff like
yeah.
that, so sort of, like,
the thing is
to bring that in, yeah, and it's, and the whole thing about it is, it's the same thing, it's, like, you know, gradually.
Yep.
We gave a little hardware space, and we had, like, one or two talks, and, like, now it's, like, half the convention.
Well, and it's also where we're getting a lot of our new people from, right?
Yeah.
Like, so this is...
That's why really Hope said yes without blinking.
Yeah, it's why, you know, things like Hope have to say yes to that, because
yeah.
that's where everyone who's interested in technology
yeah.
is now. They're all the maker thing.
It's not even yes. That's, like, an origin thing. Like,
yeah.
basically, if you... Because we're shocked at how many people, like, do not... are, like, afraid, because we were afraid with you guys for a while. They were just sort of like, oh, God, they're, like, the hacker conference thing, and it's, like, you know, do we want to kind of dip our toe into that? It's like, no, please. We see your people here all the time. Please, we want you. We love you.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
bring what you guys do, you know, into that, and this is where the new ideas start.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, speaking of being a table, and I guess because I'm about to wig out, so I think I'm going to wrap this up just for myself, and
okay.
I'm sure you have to hunt down another coffee
yes.
before you
coffee
kill me and drink my blood
for the coffee.
For the coffee. What's been, like, the most interesting conversation so far? Someone has, like, stopped off at your booth and just started talking about?
I mean, I think a lot of the conversations run along the same run.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, tell us about FreeBSD, tell us why it's different, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's got a different application. So, like, someone came by and talked about high-performance computing for, like, numerical methods, and we're like, okay, well, here's how you would use this to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it was things like that. I mean, there's no single standout, but it's always nice, because, you know, people are always asking, well, tell us about FreeBSD, you know, tell us about how it's different from Linux, whatever. And then I'm like, well, tell me what your application is, because
right.
then I can tell you
right.
the things you care about, because it's, you know, the platform is very broad, it does many things,
right.
but you've probably got an application. So it's been interesting to talk to people about their applications.
Mm. And you'll definitely find a bunch of different applications that
yes.
people want to use stuff for at Hope, because one of the things that you probably also figured out yourself is that you will have people who are standing around, it's like, oh, we could literally have our own subnuclear reactor here at the con. If only someone had classified jumper cables, and then 5 feet away, it's like, I literally brought these just in case anyone needed those.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
like, if you yell at something that you don't need, like, someone's going to have
yeah,
that here,
exactly.
or someone's going to have the idea to, like, put that on there. It's like, let's do it.
Yeah.
So thank you for being on the radio. I wish you,
thanks
I wish
for
we had
me on.
More people on for stuff. And one last time, where can they find out more about your lovely organization?
FreeBSD.org.
And you're on the vendor at Hope.
Yep.
Yep. So hopefully everyone at Radio Statler, if you're in the con, please stop by, talk. He has a lot of very interesting information. Like I said, I could only keep him here for an hour before I just started wigging out on my own. But because I remember when I was talking to someone else there, it was like, we have to, like, as I said, I'll move my schedule around. We have to have him on. He is like, he is like the Aladdin genie of the whole thing, apparently. But no, so if you're at the con, please check out their booth, grab some of their stuff. They have a cute demon character. Pet that.
Pet the demon.
And pet the demon, yeah. That's something you should bring next time. A little playable demon. Pet the demon, yeah.
Yeah.
And people could autograph it. It'll be cute. And check out there. And so that's that's the FreeBSD. Thank you so much for being on here talking about that. And eventually when Shaft will get here, I'll probably have to wrangle him for that, because he's probably wandering around just starting off random conversations at the lockpicking village. We will have more content later on today at our final stretch of Radio Statler, so stay tuned.